This
Hi,
exactly.
Julia. Hi, Ellen.
Hi.
What I'm doing. Who said hello? Oh, we have somebody else asking. How do you like that?
Hi, Julia. Hi.
Who is that saying
Ralph.
Hello?
Ralph.
Shapiro. Hi.
Oh, I don't see anybody else. Oh, because I have it shrunk. Just a second. I have to answer these RSVPs.
Ellen, you doing well?
I am doing great. I got my first shot today.
Oh, good.
Very excited.
Which vaccine did you get?
Pfizer.
I did the Moderna. I mean, I got, you know, whatever they had.
Yeah, I mean, you take whatever you can get, but yeah.
Yeah, and then the second one's in 3 weeks, right?
Yeah, mine is in 3 weeks, March 31st.
I'm finding that the...
Oh, there you are. Hi, Ralph. I didn't realize.
Of course, I've seen so many people now that have had two vaccines, and the... A lot of the hype around bad reactions to the second vaccine is, I think people, they hear something from somebody who had a bad reaction and they keep perpetually repeating.
Yeah, I'm
and
sure that's possible. Yeah.
80% of people have really, do not have any systemic problems after.
Yeah, well, it's not going to kill. I had a few days afterwards, I had like, every bone in my body hurt like from head to toe, but then it went away. I mean, it's not like.
Yeah, it's temporary.
It's temporary. And COVID isn't temporary.
Yeah, like 15, 18% of people get placebo complain of significant.
Oh, do they? At the time I was fine. I just like, I came back from the dinner and I like, but I knew I had had the vaccine. It was a few days later, but it went away in less than a day, you know.
Good evening, everyone.
Hi, Rachel.
So I had the Moderna one 2 weeks ago, and last Saturday night, I found out about the phenomenon called Moderna arm. It's just a little rash, a little itchy. It's been subsiding. If I think about it, it might itch a little bit, but it was kind of itchy on Saturday night. And I looked it up. It's not much of anything to worry about. And I've read that those people who get Moderna arm have less of a reaction on the second shot.
But either way, it's going to be, you know, I think most people, I haven't heard of anybody that had anything serious, but there is that the press has to have something to write about. Well, I'm going to look for some more RSVPs, excuse me.
Just a little itch on my arm is not going to make me do anything rash.
Oh. Okay. That was a good one, Rachel.
Thank God.
Okay. I think we still have 1 minute. Thank you for coming. So this year, actually, we have to speak about an extra topic, which is Erev Pesach Shechol Lios B'Shabbos. You have Erev Pesach that falls out on Shabbos. It makes things very complicated, and we'll discuss that topic, I guess, along the way. We'll go in the regular order, but I'll skip to that chapter. My book this year has that chapter in it, and it should be available sometime next week. Any member of the shuls is welcome to pick up the book for free. We'll email the shul to find out any information about how you can get the book. And last year was COVID, obviously, it was right at the beginning of COVID, and it was very complicated for everybody. And I joked that, people told me that they were counting my book as a coronavirus Passover book because people needed leniencies. and they needed some way to there was a lot of issues that people had with koshering and with just buying products, and it was just complicated. So they tell my book, touted my book as a leniency year book. And I said back, it's not true. It's for every year. It's for every year. And the reason it's for every year, I think looking back on COVID, we could actually understand this better. Because if we might not go through what we went through last year every year, but there are always snippets of time when things are difficult. In Halakha, they call it shas hachak. It's extenuating circumstances. So extenuating circumstances doesn't have to mean that the whole world is blown up. Extenuating circumstances can mean that you don't want to insult somebody. You see a lot of eat bread to not insult someone. No, I'm not talking about bread. I'm talking about the issues that come up today are disputed. It's not simple. The Pesach guys that are out there like to make things simple because people don't do well with complexity. But the truth is that it is complex. There's a lot of room to be lenient in many situations. And you know, if you don't want to fight with someone or you can't afford something or, you know, there's multiple other reasons that things are more complicated than normal. You can't find a certain product. I think that's why this our approach has a place at every year, at the very least. I personally think that I specifically wrote the book so that the outcomes are very reasonable according to halakha standards, and it's not like I don't believe it's a leniency, but it's more lenient than the other books. I think that should be taken into consideration, even for someone who wants to be strict. Okay, so what I'll do is I'll have it on the screen. Share the screen. I'll put up my book on Amazon so that we'll follow along the book, because that way you can read it at the same time and follow along, because I think that one of the reasons I wrote the book is so that I could give this class easier. I used to have to write the outline out every year. And this year, this way, it's out there. So let me share my screen. Okay. 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 So mitzvot in preparation for Pesach. See the bottom here, the bottom right. Mm-hmm. My Amazon Kindle. Place up.
Although some of that's covered by the photos, how do I get rid of that?
Well, you just drag the window to another place.
Yeah. Just.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so mitzvot in preparation for Pesach, studying the law. So the first thing I still tell people is that you have to. There's a halacha that you have to learn the laws of Pesach 30 days prior to Pesach, which starts on Purim. And I joke around always that Purim is the absolute worst holiday to have before Pesach, because everyone has all this hamantashen everywhere. And then God's like, it's like a joke. God's telling us like, okay, now clean it up. So, you know, a lot of people tell me it's very practical for them, because that way they do the spring cleaning. After Purim it's a perfect time to do it. So you can look at it both ways. But the thing is, I started the book off with this halacha is because it's really important to learn the halachas of Pesach, and 30 days is given is because there's so many laws and so many intricacies that's difficult to understand it all in such a short period of time. Even if you do it every year, it's still a lot of information. So that's why one of the reasons I wrote the book is very easy to go through all the laws in a short pamphlet. Well, not a pamphlet, it's a monograph, whatever you want to call it. That way you're able to understand the laws and a level that you need to be practical in a short period of time. So that's one of the goals of the book. Make sure to put Malachit there, because it's very important that we shouldn't forget it. We think about ourselves the whole Pesach. We should remember that there's other people who are needy, and I think it's really important to take advantage of this importance of Malachit. Okay, so now what I'll do is Chametz prohibition. So this is very important, a very important principle. All flour derived from the five species of grain, which mix with water and allow it to ferment before being baked, falls under the definition of chametz. So it's basically, I try to make this very simple because it's very complicated and there's no point in going into so in detail. But the point is, the first thing to know is 5 grains are the main thing. It's, you know, this kidney oats, rice, and chickpeas, and all these things. But the main thing with chametz is there's a lot of leeway for that for the other stuff. People treat kidney oat as if it's chametz. It's not the same thing. Chametz is only the 5 grains. It goes to the point extent that there was actually a halacha book written for Pesach that said that you can't buy gas from certain gas stations because the gas had ethanol in it, and ethanol might have been from corn. So that's how far this goes. I'm just telling you, the thing you have to see in your mind is 5 grains, right? Wheat, spelt, barley, oats, and rye. Those are the 5 grains, and that has to be something that's very prominent in your mind. By the way, if anyone has any questions, I appreciate if you write them down, and I'll stop in the middle or at the end, for sure at the end, to answer questions. But since it's such a difficult situation because of Zoom, it's hard for people to chime in. So I'll pause for some questions, but just write them down in the meantime if you have anything, any questions to address that you think I didn't address. Okay, then there's prohibitions. Okay, now eating comes. So this is very interesting. So eating comes for Pesach. Person, there's a mitzvah called tashbisu. Tashbisu means that the Torah commanded us to take chametz out of our house, to clear our house of chametz. So it's interesting to note that there's some opinions that hold that any chametz you get rid of before 30 days from Purim, and you have in mind to keep the mitzvah, then you fulfill the mitzvah of tashbisu because you get chametz out of your house. So the briskers in Israel on Erev Yom Kippur, there's a mitzvah to eat. So he says, "Call ochav v'shosav b'chi yilisana b'chi b'siri." If anyone who eats and drinks on the 9th and fasts on the 10th, as if he fasted for 2 days in a row, because they consider it to be a very meritorious thing to eat and drink on the 9th. So because of that, the briskers used to suck candy. Because even though it's really not eating, I don't understand that, but they're saying like they're constantly eating so that they could fulfill this mitzvah. So similarly, it's very easy mitzvah to fulfill. You think to yourself every time you have pasta or challah or anything before Pesach, you think to yourself, I'm fulfilling the mitzvah of getting rid of chametz in my house. It's a regular act of eating, but you could turn it into a mitzvah. So I thought that's too valuable to not share. Selling chametz, you could do through the shul. Just send me an email. Send an email to the shul, and then we'll sell it for you. This year is very important. Selling chametz is very important because it has to be done right. Because don't take this matter into your own hands. Because Shabbos, you can't sell this. The property, you can't sell the chametz on Shabbos, according to most poskim. I mean, there's ways around it if you didn't do it, but the fact is, you really should sell before Shabbos. And timing is complicated this year because it's Erev Pesach on Erev Shabbos. Because you still want to eat the chametz on in the morning of the Shabbos, but you need to sell the rest of your chametz so before Shabbos. So it's a little more complicated this year. And then if you're going away for the whole Pesach, it's basically, and you know you're not going to be back for Pesach, then you don't have to check unless you're there the night of Bdika. You're not there Thursday night. Then if you're home, then you should do some level of Bdika. But otherwise, if you're not going to be home for Pesach, then you could sell your house and just put I used to tell people, put chametz, just in case you put chametz in the right areas. Or you don't have to clean or anything like that if you're not going to be home. Or any home that you're not going to be in. Okay. So now what I'll do is I'll skip to the last chapter. I don't know if this is going to be harder to see. Here. So this is the new chapter that I just wrote. It's hard to see maybe, but I'll try to. What's that? Okay, so this year is an atypical scenario. It's interesting to note that it's going to happen again In 2025, and then not until 2045. So this is a very rare year. I think there were 11 times in so far in the 20th century, the 21st century that we had, 11 times in the entire 20th century that it was, that this happened. So basically a 10%, 11% occurrence. Okay, so basically the general guideline is that the pre-Pesach preparation is almost exactly the same as they are in other years. So we'll explain it. There are differences. The fast of the firstborn occurs on Thursday morning because you're not supposed to fast on Friday. And anyway, it's not a fast day. Really, people just go to see him, and we'll have a see him in shul. And we'll if anyone needs a see him, if it's a bechor, they would like to come, we'll have services available for everybody. Then Bedikas Chametz is moved back to Thursday night. So it's usually done on the night of the 14th. This is on the night of the 13th, which is 2 days before Pesach. And you do the same exact procedure as you do every year. You say the Bittul the same way you say every year. And then you just have to put aside food. If you're going to, I'm going to suggest you don't, but if you're going to put aside Chametz for Shabbos, then that should make sure you put aside that food. On Friday morning, we do beer. So beer occurs the regular time you do every year. If someone didn't do beer on time, this year is different. You could do it later if you didn't do it because it's not really Erev Pesach. It's really 2 days before Pesach, or a day and a half before Pesach. So this that day is treated generally like a normal Erev Pesach, but the difference is that you could still eat chametz until nightfall until the next morning at 11 o'clock. But basically, since you could eat chametz after this, we have to look like a hybrid. Look at it as, on one hand, it's treated like the same, but it's we still know that we'll eat, and that's why you can't say the regular bittul on the beer on Friday morning, because the regular bittul says the fifth hour before the fifth hour, which is about 12 o'clock. Normally you have to say I'm relinquishing my rights to all the chametz. I have no connection to it. It's the dust of the earth. But we're not saying that this year, because this year you may be holding chametz till afterwards. So we don't see the bittul until Shabbos morning. The bittul with all the statement that we normally say in the morning when we burn the chametz, we do it Shabbos morning, and I'll explain how the Shabbos morning procedure has to go this year. It's very, very weird, very different kind of year. Okay. Should kosher all the utensils on Friday before sunset. Now Shabbos meals. Okay. So basically, there's three. We have a requirement to eat three meals on Shabbos. This is a very complicated year, because really, it's very hard to keep chametz in your house on Shabbos and then get rid of it in an easy fashion, in a straightforward fashion, without having complications with the rest of the food. Because on a weekday, you have options to get rid of your chametz, and we're prepared. We don't have to have chametz in the house. We have to eat meals. So it's very complicated to have chametz in your house. So there are ideas that are devised, and I really advise us to do this, that they basically make the Shabbos meals different than they normally would make them. In other words, they make it chametz free without bread. And I think that's the most advisable path to take, because Erev Pesach this year is being on Shabbos. It's just much easier if you just, even though it's early, you just prepare the whole house, and all the meals are not chametz, and that way you don't have to worry about it. But if you don't do that, I remember I was at the mirror, it was everyone's frantic. We were eating the challah on past the tablecloths, and we throw the past the tablecloths, and we throw it a certain place because otherwise it would be in Jewish property. It was just a mad rush. It was crazy. But if you don't have to do that, go through that, then it makes things a lot easier. So I recommend that everyone clean their houses of chametz the way they would every year, at least before sunset, at least before Shabbos starts. Just make sure all your chametz is locked up, or put aside, and your house will be kosher for Pesach going into Shabbos. I highly recommend that. But I have here, if a person, I will explain the ramifications, why what the different options are. But right here, if someone does want to eat chametz, a Shabbos meal, I have a few recommendations. Limit chametz to bread alone. All other food utensils and plates used at the meal should be kosher for Pesach. Use disposable utensils and plates with chametz. Eat the chametz away from the table, preferably at the very beginning of the meal, in a place where chametz can be contained and not mixed with other foods or utensils. Select the type of bread that won't produce many crumbs, like pita bread or challah rolls. Order the minimum amount of chametz, approximately one pita roll per person per meal. Then Shabbos morning, if your meal was chametz, you have to stop eating, preferably the meal or at least the chametz, before the fourth hour. Before the end of the fourth hour, which is, I think, 1101 in Philadelphia. 1101. There's a custom to hold morning services the Shabbos extremely early so attendees can go home and eat the morning meal before that deadline. And then you make sure you say the bittul before the fifth hour. The regular bittul, which is fifth hour before the end of the fifth hour, is about 12:03 p.m. And then there's the other options. The other options are, instead of bread, is that you eat egg matzah. Egg matzah is going to be very high demand this year. So I recommend if anyone wants to do this, they should make sure to get egg matzah early as possible or try to nail down some, because this is what a lot of people do, is they take egg matzah and they make hamotzi on egg matzah. What's the difference? Because egg matzah is pasva b'kisnin. It's really not real necessarily bread. Why do we say that? Because bread is not sweetened. And egg matzah is sweetened. So you could argue that it's still like matzah, but everyone agrees you can't use egg matzah, which was instead of water, they use fruit juice. You can't use it at the Seder night. So that's why, since there's a prohibition to eat matzah 24 hours or 12 or whatever it is, 12 hours before Pesach starts, so you can't have regular matzah. So the compromise, what Moshe Feinstein says, the compromise is you have egg matzah. Because egg matzah, on one hand, is not chametz. On the other hand, it's not bread. So it's possible to kiss it. Possible to kiss it is like cookies and cakes. So how do you make a meal over that? Because he said that since it's Shabbos meal, you're clearly doing it for that purpose. So that makes it as if it's regular matzah, regular bread. And that way you win both ways. You're eating the suda of the meal on Shabbos, and you don't have to bring chametz into your house on Shabbos. So that's the best approach. I also think that some opinions that say, I think it's legit to eat matzah Friday night. Non-shmur matzah Friday night, because if shmur matzah, we're stringent because we don't want to eat matzah that you set aside for the Seder, and that's what you're supposed to have shmur matzah at the Seder. But if you have regular matzah, so then that prohibition is not there. And regular matzah, some hold that you can't eat matzah on Erev Pesach from Shabbos morning, from in the morning in Erev Pesach. So that means that the best thing to do is, if you have regular streitz matzah, whatever, not shmur matzah, then make the meal on regular matzah on Friday night. And then Shabbos morning, we'll see what people do. This shal shittus and everything, third meal. Shabbos morning, you have egg matzah. You make a meal on egg matzah. And the meal should be done in the morning before the time, because some hold the Ramah says that egg matzah should not be eaten after the time of the fourth hour, end of the fourth hour. So ideally, you should eat the morning meal before 11:01, and if you miss that deadline, then you could go to eat until 12 till chatzot, which is 12 which is one oh five or something, 104. And then if you miss that, then you can even eat later egg matzah. So, ideally you should try to eat the egg matzah in the morning. Now, another complication is that third meal. So third meal, a lot of people do is they just have a fruit or a snack in the afternoon. That's considered for the third meal. That's very legitimate. Some people like to split up the meal in the morning too. That's what was in the mirror. They said they have to split the morning meal into two. So what that means is you have second meal and third meal back to back. And even though you're supposed to eat third meal in the afternoon, but this year they made an exception that you could eat back to back. So if you want to fulfill all the obligations, then you may see you wash in the morning before 11 o'clock. You make hamotzi, you bench, then you go back to you take a break for a couple minutes, then you go back and you wash again, and then you make hamotzi again, and then you eat whatever you're gonna eat, and then bench. And this should all be done before 11 o'clock ideally. If that doesn't work, then you have those two time frames. You have till 1 o'clock, and then again till in the afternoon if you need to eat the meal late. But that's the I think the best option. If a person wants to fulfill all the obligations, you split the meal into two in the morning. You have third meal in the afternoon. Just have a snack or something, and that way, and do it all egg matzah, and you find out you use regular non-shmur matzah, and that way you cover all your bases, and it's done in the easiest fashion. Okay, I'll stop here for questions, because I'm sure the people have a lot of questions on what I said, because this is a complicated setup. Anyone want to ask any questions?
I have a question.
Okay.
I didn't understand what you said about, well, I understood it. You said that bread doesn't have sugar, sweetener, but a lot of breads have sweetener.
I didn't get into that so much, but the possible because it means cookies and cakes. So the question is, how sweet does the bread have to be in order to be not qualify as bread?
Mm-hmm.
Basically, what Moshe Feinstein is saying is egg matzah is sweet enough that it should be like cake and cookies. You make mezonot on it. But since you're eating it a Shabbos meal, and you clearly want to make it into bread, so that's possible. You could make cake and cookies into bread if you make it like the main part of the meal. You say, this is my bread for the meal.
Oh.
So since Shabbos, we're clearly doing that with the egg matzah, he says that the egg matzah could serve as bread as well, even though it's really in the category of cake and cookies. And interesting to note that the Sfarim, the whole year, they make mezonot on matzah. Matzah is like crackers. Crackers are mezonot. We make hamotzi because we treat it as bread, but the Sfarim treat matzah as if it's cake and cookies because it's just a cracker. It's not like real bread.
Oh, okay, thank you.
Except on Pesach. Pesach, after they treat it as bread because the Torah turns it into bread, so to speak.
Okay.
Any other questions? Wow. Pretty good. Okay. So if you do have chametz in your house in on Shabbos morning, then you should flush down the toilet. If you don't, as long as you don't have a plumbing problem. And then if you need to throw out your garbage, it's a question I get all the time, is that the garbage should be placed in at least should be off your property. But if you can't get off your property because they'll pick up the garbage and put it in your garbage can outside and take it to the curb. And if you can't take it to the curb because it's too early, so then you can leave it on your property. And even worst case scenario, if you really can't do all that, you could even keep trash in your house because it's considered trash. So even though it really is ideally not to have chametz in your house, but you have chametz and there's nothing you can do, so you can't flush it on the toilet, then and you can't put it outside and put it in your garbage can. And then as soon as the opportunity you have to throw out your garbage, you can throw out the garbage. Preparation for Seder preparation this year is very complicated. I haven't found a heter yet to start the Seder early because there's just too many complications. But I'm still working on it. In the meantime, the only leniency I could have is that 21 minutes after sunset, which is, I have time here, 7:41 p.m. on Saturday night, you can start preparing for the Seder in a way that there's no malacha, and Shabbos is over 8:02. So you really have to wait till 8:02 to cook and everything else. That's why the person should do the best to prepare everything for the Seder they can on Friday. If everything's ready for the Seder to go, then you'll be prepared to start the Seder as soon as possible on Saturday night. And then the Saturday night Kiddush has Havdalah in it, so that's another reason why it's complicated to make it early. So basically, Havdalah just has the candle. So that's basically the story with Pesach Shalosh Shabbos. I think it covered all the issues. No, any questions?
Can you just repeat the last concept about starting the Seder? I just missed.
So starting the Seder is complicated this year. Usually I tell people they could start the Seder from Plaga Mincha. Plaga Mincha is about, it's an hour and 15 minutes before sunset approximately. So that would probably mean about around 6 o'clock normally. But this year you can't do that because this year Shabbos is in the way. Shabbos is Shabbos the night for the first Seder. So the second Seder, which is on Sunday night, you could start early. If you have kids, you need to stay up or some other reason you need, you start Plaga Mincha, which is about 6 o'clock ish. We say that as long as you wait until 8:02 to eat matzah or eat some matzah after 8:02, so you fulfill the mitzvah of matzahs, which is a biblical commandment, on after sunset, after nightfall, and you say a little bit of the Haggadah. You say some of the Haggadah after nightfall. So then you fulfill your obligation according to everyone, and this you cover your bases. But if you really need to start early, you can start around 6 o'clock. I gotta look at the time exactly, But on this year, the first night of the Seder, you can't start early. You have to start. You can only start preparing and do non-malacha things. Not is 7:41. That makes sense?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, now.
Wait, I have one question. So if you're not going to have chametz on Shabbos, so can you just get rid of everything Friday morning?
Yeah, that's right. That's the best thing to do. The best thing to do is do it like a regular year. Get rid of everything Friday morning. Bittle. You don't say bittle. You just do the beer. You get rid of it, and that's it.
Okay.
Everyone just has to remind themselves to say the bittle is really important to say. So if like Ellen gave all your chametz, then there is legitimacy to say bittle early, but it's preferred to say it on Shabbos just because that's the day that you can have your chametz until that point, so just in case something comes up, you don't have to line the bittul.
Okay.
Now for kashering. So I explain to people that most religious Jews have a third, fourth, and fifth set of dishes and silverware, and I just think it's definitely not necessary to do that. If a person doesn't want to do that, it's definitely an easy way to kosher the kosher kitchen. So, koshering the kitchen. So we have basically kosher oven. You have to turn the oven on to the highest temperature that you feel comfortable turning your oven to, and then it needs to be on that temperature for 20 minutes. And if you see any food particles before you do that, you should check for food particles. Make sure there's no real. If something's really burnt up, it's not considered food. But if it's food particles, just clean. The best thing to do is clean the oven as well as you can, and then turn it on for 20 minutes at the highest temperature that you feel comfortable turning it on to. The grates are usually koshered either in the oven or the grates on top of the stove in the oven, or by putting a pan on top of it, and that way you can kosher the pan at the same time. Both ways, you do the pan both ways. And that way, for about 5 seconds or whatever it is, as long as it takes to get the surface of the grate very hot, and obviously it's preferable to clean all these things with a stringent cleanser before you kosher them. I should mention, though, that with regard to bedikah, there's a few concepts I didn't mention. Bedikas chametz, you only thing you have to check for are places that you normally bring comments into. So you, generally speaking, person's not going to have to check their bathroom or their bedroom unless they eat in those places. And the only thing you're looking for are food that's larger than like, let's say a Cheerio, something someone would pop in their mouth. Like they would pop in their mouth if they find a Cheerio in the back of their sofa cushions, but I'm saying, or wherever in the back of your car seat, whatever, but saying that it has to be large enough that you would eat it. You could pop it in your mouth. Not crumbs. You don't have to look for crumbs in your most of your house. People don't drive themselves crazy with cleaning and with you know, making sure every inch of the house is clean. It's a waste of time because really you have limited amount of time to do this. So just spend the time wisely. So most of the house doesn't need to be checked, or at least it needs to be minimally checked. So if you sometimes in your room, so check in your room if you have any pieces of food around. It has to be a piece of food. It can't be just crumbs. Don't matter. Crumbs don't combine together, and they're not considered to be a food that you buy by message. You keep the crumbs in your house for Pesach. You're looking for candy bars or just something that would be edible. Like I said, you can just pop in your mouth and eat, but not crumbs. You have to be concerned about crumbs in your dining room, so you should use a astringent cleanser to clean the dining room. And same thing with the kitchen. Just use a astringent cleaner in your kitchen, and try to get as many areas possible that chametz could have gone to. Do the same in your refrigerator. Freezer, I don't think it has to be done. You don't have to defrost the freezer to do that, but do as much as you can. You don't have to do every inch, but do as much as you can in terms of cleaning up with astringent cleanser, which is like 4-9 or 7th generation or anything that's caustic in any way is good. You can do ammonia, you have to do that to the surfaces of your oven, and you do it to the surfaces of your sink. And that's it. You don't have to cover. You don't have to wait. That's enough to satisfy the obligation to kosher your kitchen. In terms of koshering with fire, with the stuff you cook with, that's all you have to do. Refrigerator and freezer. That's all you have to do. You have to do anything. Just you put the chametz in a bag. If you want to keep chametz over Pesach that you're selling, so you put chametz in a bag, label chametz, and then that's it. You just tie it up and make sure everyone knows that if they reach for that bag, they'll say it's chametz right away. And you can do the same in your freezer. That could be sold. It's preferable to get rid of all your chametz, but you don't have to. If it's too hard for you to get rid of all your chametz, then just put it in a bag and tie it up and sell it. And remember, getting rid of your chametz, I'm talking about the five grains. I'm not talking about, you don't have to sell your kidney oat items. You could just put those aside in a bag. That's you don't have to sell. There's no such thing as selling kidney items. There's no reason to sell them.
Rabbi, excuse me, I'm not sure if I heard and understood you correctly about the grates. Did you say that you could put the stove grates into the hot oven when you're koshering your oven?
You can do that. It's an option. Some grates can withstand the heat, but if most of them can, I'm aware of. So that's definitely a way to kosher them. Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
Sure. So, let me just go to the next one. Stove tops just have to be cleaned well with astringent cleanser. Doesn't have to be covered and doesn't need hot water poured on the surface. Displays, knobs, hoods, and surfaces need to be cleaned the same way. Refrigerators and freezers need to be cleaned the same way. Toaster ovens should not be used because they're difficult to clean. Microwave ovens, just again, use astringent cleanser on the whole thing. It's preferable to consider that the bottom of the certain parts of the microwave get very hot. And if you're aware that you cook chametz in the microwave, so it's better to put like a separation between the food on Pesach and the walls of the microwave. But most people do that anyway. They put a plate or something. So that's fine. Dishwasher. You could run one full regular cycle while the dishwasher is empty and this with dishwasher detergent, and then you can use it on Pesach. What else? So kitchen utensils. So all utensils can either could drop it in hot water. People do, but another interesting approach is you can put it in the oven, but you put it in the oven, obviously things that are oven proof. And if it's not oven proof, you can even do that, like with plastic and stuff like that. Plastic can be kosher. Almost every material can be kosher. It could be plastic, could be Pyrex, could be all these things can be kosher. And the easiest way to do is put it in the oven for like a minute. You put it in the oven for a minute, as long as it gets hot to the touch, that's hot enough. You don't have to melt it. You know, it just has to be, it's an easy way because a lot of times boiling hot water on the top of your stove is not very efficient. Many things is efficient. For me, it's efficient in a sense because what I do is I take all my utensils at one time, throw them on the pot. Even though they're touching each other, just move them around. And there's no way that water didn't touch every inch of that utensil. So that's a very easy way. You kosher all your forks and spoons and knives in one pot. Obviously, fleishig and milchig separate, but in one shot, and that will kosher everything in your kitchen. You don't have to get you use Pesach special Pesach utensils for that. Pots and pans. Pots and pan. You just put it on the flame, one side, the other side. For about 5 seconds until it gets very hot. The goal here, koshering, is to get very hot to the touch. So it doesn't take more than 5 seconds, I think, for a pan to get boiling hot. Like if you took it off the fire and you touched it, you get burned. So 5-10 seconds at most. You could put pots in the oven too, by the way. If people pour water in, it's a pain to pour water. So put pots in the oven for a couple minutes. You kosher your pots that way. Everything should be cleaned before you kosher them. And because make sure there's no chametz residue at all on the item. Like I have a glassware, plasticware, glaze, stoneware, Pyrex, bakeware. If oven resistant, maybe kosher in an oven. Okay. Next. Okay. That's all we went through. Food for Pesach. So this is a very controversial topic. I think it's getting more controversial every year. I think now it's really being controversial because, I mean, I don't get me wrong. I think the kosher agencies are amazing. They do amazing work, but it is a business. And the problem is that the alternative meat industry, which I'm very in favor of, is really hurting the bottom line because the meat and milk production is like a major aspect of kosher. And people are all going to plant-based foods. The major source of revenue is gone. So what ends up happening is that they generally speaking, I'm speaking generally, I'm not trying to badmouth anyone, but just generally speaking, there's campaigns telling people that they don't want to keep kosher themselves and they need the kosher agencies to keep kosher. It's arguable. There's definitely an approach that makes sense, but I'm saying there's an alternative approach, which is that a person has the ability to look at ingredient panels and try to make their own decisions about what they want to eat. Rachel brought up to me that this is nothing but iodine and salt. So iodine salt issue is that they, in order to have the iodine mix into the salt properly, they put something called, what is it called? It's a solution that has dextrose in it. So they're saying that you can't buy iodine salt because because of the dextrose. Dextrose might be made from wheat, it might be made from corn. So the thing about these topics of kosher is it's very, very, it seems very complicated because you say, well, how do I know what goes into the salt? I can't rely on myself. But the truth is that there are many principles in halacha that will tell you that you can make your own decision about this. Because when something's not kosher, it has to be at least sensed. What I mean by sense is there has to be a taste, which is the worst thing. It has to be at least visible. like it's like a coloring that's less serious, but that's still an issue. It has to be felt like a marshmallow, like something gives it, and it has to be sometimes smell. But the main thing is taste is the worst thing. Taste is the thing you worry about the most. Color and smell and firmness of items are less stringent, less important, but they are important. But if you can't detect an item in a food, you can't taste it, you can't smell it, you can't. So that means it's nullified. Nullified. Now you can't do that on pay. On Pesach, you don't nullify chametz. Sages said if that's why I tell people you shouldn't really eat in Starbucks because on Pesach, because even if you everything you order is kosher, it's very hard to imagine that in Starbucks not a good chance that a crumb is going to fall into your coffee. It's very hard to guard against a crumb, and a crumb is what makes kosher food not kosher on Pesach. But if it was produced before Pesach, the halacha is that it's bottled like any other food. So if you can't taste it, I had this case with Via Coffee from Starbucks. So Via Coffee from Starbucks, people were asking me if they could have, because they were coffee addicts and they needed to have some sort of regular coffee, not Maxwell House, some sort of regular coffee that would be kosher Pesach. So they called one of the kosher agencies in California who gave supervision to why wasn't kosher for Pesach, the Via. So they said they used some agent to the decaffeinated one, they used some agent and whatever. So I said, can you taste it? No, it's removed before. Can you smell it? No. Okay, so I said, it's kosher Pesach. I'm talking about because it's bottled before Pesach. It's not there. You don't see it. There's no sense of yours could taste it or anything. So that makes it like it's not there. It's called batal. It's batal in halacha. The problem is that a kosher agency cannot give a hechsher to such an item, possibly, because they could say that they're like the manufacturer themselves. They're actually doing it. They're actually using the chametz as the agent for this procedure. But if you are a consumer, so it would seem to be clear that you're not buying something, you're not violating the halacha by buying and eating it because it's already in there. And they didn't make it for you. They didn't say, David Cohen is this is David Cohen's bag of marshmallows or David Cohen's bag of Via Coffee. It's just made in general. So basically you have an item that's in front of you that has no detectable taste of chametz and no detectable smell of chametz. Nothing chametz is there. It just happened to be made with chametz. So it's very hard to argue that that's not permissible to do. You can't buy that product because we think of chametz as like this monster that if as long as you has anything to do with chametz, you get the cooties. You can't touch the item. The item is off base, off limits because it's saw bread somewhere. But in a regular factory, there's no breadcrumbs flying around the warehouses and the place where they produce the food. And if there was, it would be nullified. I mean, it's like saying there's bugs in everything you eat. Sure, there's bugs in everything you eat. You can't eat, you won't be anything if you can't eat bugs. But the Torah only said bugs that you can't see. You can see. If you can't see the bug, it's not prohibited. And other types of bugs are permissible also. So when someone says to me, you can't eat strawberries, I'm like, why? Can you see this? Can you see the bug? Can you taste the bug? There's nothing there. So I think that's a very reasonable approach that makes it a lot easier to keep these halachas. And it's said to say it happens all the time. People tell me they can't find kosher Pesach locks. They can't find kosher Pesach pickles. I don't know, whatever. Pickles, we'll get to vinegar. But basically, they can't find kosher Pesach items. So I tell them, look, send me the ingredient panel and I'll let you know. I mean, most products you have to know where they're coming from. But at the same time, it doesn't necessarily need to have a hechsher for Pesach on that. I know there's gonna be a lot of questions on this probably, so I'll open up for questions. Nobody? Wow, I got through the most complicated part. So, Rachel, does that answer your question about iodine?
I think so. I think you're saying go ahead and don't worry about the salt because the dextrose that may or may not have been from the corn is just so, it would have been altered, it's minor, it's not detectable, et cetera, et cetera.
That's right.
Is that what you...
In other words, dextrose is a product made from mostly from corn. Like 99% of the dextrose in the country is made from corn. If it's made from wheat, they say it. But even if it's made from wheat, and you know it's made from wheat, there's another leniency that it's not detectable. It's also not food. When they turn it into a chemical, they break down to the chemical process. It's pan chadash. It's a brand new thing. It's like a new thing. Now there are arguments against these arguments. I'm not saying this is the only way to look at things, but there's so many different arguments to say that this is not problematic for chametz. Even if it were chametz, I think just the fact that 90-something% of dextrose in America is made from chametz, made from corn, that's not chametz, not from wheat, is enough to rely on because it's such a minority of situation. We have corn and it's chametz, and it's a minor ingredient. The amount of chametz that's in there is so little that it would be bottled before Pesach. So be nullified. So I think that it's very reasonable to say I'm not going to worry about it. If you want to worry about something, just try to look for non-iodized salt. But I think if somebody's, I mean, there were cases where people bought like ketchup and they would throw it out. I'm like, don't throw it out. It's kosher Pesach. You know, they're going to like throw away their dishes because they ate ketchup that wasn't kosher Pesach on there. People think have this thing feeling that if it's not kosher Pesach, it has bread. It's not bread. It's almost rarely has a halachic, always a halachic way to look at it that's not chametz at all. And same with vinegar. If it just says vinegar on the thing, then it's definitely not from corn. Sometimes they say distilled vinegar. Distilled vinegar is also not a problem. Distilled vinegar is sometimes from wheat. But same thing, it's completely broken down into chemical particles. And distilled is also better because some hold distilled makes it into a vapor and then basically, the vapor is a brand new item that some people allow brandy because of that. Even grape brandy, in Europe, they have many posts that allow grape brandy because it's like a new thing. It's not like wine anymore. What do you mean? It's schnapps. Yeah, but it's basically since it's not the same product that was at the beginning. It's a new product. So this all the more so. This is a completely different product that's turns into. So I'm not saying you should rely on any of these one things, but if you put the whole story together, you're not eating chametz. It's not chametz. But like I said, if anyone has any questions about any food item, just take a picture of it and text me or email me, and I'll be happy to let you know whether it's kosher pesach or not. And this makes a big difference to people because people need to be able to buy food items, especially in Center City or similar areas where it's, you got to schlep 30 minutes to get to kosher Pesach items, and you just went shopping and you're like, oh, I forgot this and this and this. So you have the options to buy food without a kosher Pesach on the label. Matzah meal is one thing you have to be wary of because matzah meal, if it's not kosher Pesach, it's not made under the right conditions. So that's like that's more serious because that's the problem, that could be problematic.
Why is that more problematic? Matzah meal?
Because matzah meal, if it's not, it's five grains. It's made out of wheat, and if it's not made on the right conditions of
chametz, then it's not considered it's not considered Pesach matzah.
Okay, then we have beer and stuff. There's certain items that we know are made from wheat, and you can't have them that are alcohol. But most alcohol is not going to be of 5 grains. Wine does not need a kosher Pesach hechsher. Coffee into tea bags. So you see these things. A lot of the kosher agencies will tell you you can't buy tea bags because they're made in this condition. They're all the same thing, same idea. They have enzymes. You know, enzymes are not food. Enzymes are chemicals, and chemicals are not subject to the laws of food. It's like eight balance. It's like nothing. And on top of it, it's completely changed. Chemistry, it's chemistry, and these items are buttle. They're nullified because you can't detect them. So, this deals with a lot of issues. Yeah.
With regard to the jams or preserves, that they're kosher for Pesach if they don't have chametz ingredients, I saw something that it's that make these fruit preserve things that I guess they use grape concentrate rather than added sugar per se. Mm-hmm. So since it's grape, I didn't know if the grapes ingredients or if it might be grape juice concentrate. What's your take on that?
So grape juice concentrate is fine. The reason is because there's a few reasons why, but it has to have a halakha of wine. And meaning it has to be a drinkable wine. This is not wine. This is a derivative. So the question is, in America, there's no such thing as grape juice or any juice that's not mevushel. It's not cooked first, right? Flash pasteurized right away because people could get very sick. So every grape juice concentrate in America is flash pasteurized, and that makes it immune for getting staminium. But there's a lot more to say about this, but it's a long topic. But basically, if it doesn't have a halakha of wine, there's a lot of reasons why that itself would make it permissible. And it's also a thing is that wine, to be called wine, needs to be at least 16% of the product. So grape juice concentrate, even though you taste it, but that's not the prohibition. The prohibition of wine is rabbinical, and more than 1/6, less than 1/6 of the product means it only has a halakha of wine. The reason is because they used to dilute the wine, so they had wine that they produced, and then they diluted the wine. The maximum was 16%. They called it wine. It was more than 16.66%. If it's less than that in the product, which is definitely the case with grape juice concentrate, and that's the reason. Another reason why we don't have to worry about the product as being most products that have grape juice in it are less than that. So there's other reasons too, but basically most products that have grape juice or grape juice concentrate is kosher to it's not a non-kosher ingredient.
But as long as wine is kosher, it's okay for Pesach, right?
Wine's okay. Wine doesn't have to be kosher.
Regular wine, as long as it's kosher. Okay.
Then some people have an issue with eggs or milk or dairy products. I think there's no problem with that because it might not even be milked on Pesach itself, which would be the only issue. And the reason they say it is because it says the animals benefit from chametz because that's in their feed, so that you're benefiting from something that benefits from chametz, which is itself a wild assertion. But even if you want to say that's a problem, it's not a problem if it's done before Pesach. So most of the time, these products are not an issue, even a minute issue. But even if it is an issue, to say that you're prohibited from having them is very, very, very hard to say. So fresh fish and chicken and meat, there's not kosher Pesach is kosher Pesach as long as you just wash it off before you eat it. There's no reason to think that there's chametz on there. Fresh frozen canned fruits and vegetables with no probiotic ingredients are kosher for Pesach. Bottled water, obviously, juices, soft drinks do not need Pesach certification. Spices don't need certification. And by the way, that means that the spices in your kitchen, if you're pretty sure that it didn't come in direct contact with chametz, hot chametz, then you can still use it. I know people have, every year they buy new spices. They have like 17 onion powders. You don't have to do that. You could use any product in your kitchen that you're pretty certain, you have to be 100% certain, but pretty certain that no chametz got in contact with it. You could use on, if it's kosher on Pesach, you can use on Pesach. You don't have to buy everything new. Chocolate and candy products also can be kosher without just by ingredients. Nut butters, jams, preserves, jellies. So meat substitutes you have to be careful of, because meat substitutes a lot of times hide in their ingredients wheat products. So you have to be careful about that. I think Beyond and Impossible both are not problematic. I think they're okay for Pesach, if I'm remembering correctly. I don't think there's any chametz ingredients in that. Gluten-free products are not automatically considered chametz-free, although gluten-free products usually are chametz-free. The reason it's not chametz-free is because it might have oats in it. But the reason it is chametz-free is because the process to make like certain products gluten-free, like distilled vinegar, the gluten is taken out, and that the gluten is what makes it rise. So the fact that part of the wheat chaff is not there would also be a reason to say that's not chametz. So that's another reason why I say, people say that it's derived from wheat. Doesn't necessarily make it prohibited. As I said, you should not eat in a restaurant. You could eat in a restaurant, but packaged items, you know, and you can use your utensils, because as long as they're clean, because if it's cold, then it's not an issue of chametz. So someone has to eat in a restaurant, which this year I think is probably most people won't, but in case they need to, like a coffee shop, so then you could use packaged goods on your utensils. The pet food, it's not recommended to change pet food, but if you for the health reasons for the animal, and as long as the minority ingredient is chametz, which is usually the case, then you could use the pet food. Even if it has chametz in the ingredients, but as long as it's the minority. Soaps, detergents, cosmetics, toiletries, medications, all these items do not need to be kosher Pesach. They're not food. Anything not food is not kosher. It doesn't have to be kosher Pesach. So if you have oatmeal in your shampoo, you could use it. Kidney oat. So the items that are on the list of kidney oat are right here. Whoops. Rice, beans, lentils, chickpeas, buckwheat, millet, peas, mustard seeds, poppy seeds, and sesame seeds. All these things have sources in the last 500 years that they're chametz. Right? Anything, if it's any, even if these items are found in an ingredient panel, it's still kosher as long as it's less than 50%. And if it's been chemically changed, it's another reason to say it's okay. So like soy isolate is made out of soy, which is questionable whether that's kidney to begin with, and it's minor ingredient, and it's chemically changed. Same thing with corn syrup. Corn syrup is not kidney oat, because if you drink the corn syrup, maybe even that it's not. But even if you did, fine. But this is a minority ingredient in Coca-Cola that is questionable whether it's kidney or not. Corn is questionable whether it's kidney or not, and it's chemically changed. So you have at least three major arguments to say by itself alone it would permissible, but this way, it's clearly permissible to you don't have to buy a special soda for Pesach. Quinoa is a great food to have for Pesach, because it's not chametz, it's not kidney. So a lot of people use quinoa because it replaces a lot of the starchy foods we eat. Corn, soy, and peanuts are all in category of foods that are questionable whether the chametz or not. The custom of is people not to eat it. I wouldn't necessarily say it's the worst thing in the world if you eat a can of corn or something like that. But if someone wants to be stringent, then they could be stringent on corn itself, but to be stringent on derivatives of corn and to be stringent on mixtures of corn, to me doesn't make sense because even regular kidney oil would be permissible in that situation. Okay.
Oh, Rabbi, what about fennel or fennel seeds? Are they out?
So fennel seeds are not on the list. I have a list here. I have another list here.
Oh.
If it is questionable whether food falls in the category of kidney oil, it may be consumed in Pesach. This includes green beans, hemp seeds, flax seeds, chia seeds, sunflower seeds, pumpkin seeds, anise seeds, coriander, cumin, saffron, tapioca, and amaranth. And I think that it would include fennel too, yes.
Okay.
Because the only seeds they said were not allowed were mustard seeds, sesame seeds, and poppy seeds. Those are the ones that are mentioned. But when people try to apply it to all seeds, it doesn't make sense to apply it to sesame seeds. I mean, why annihilate sesame seeds? Because chametz might have fallen into it. It just doesn't happen. We know chametz is not in there. So there's no reason for the injunction. But since they made an injunction, you can't say, I'm not going to keep it, because they made an injunction. People will keep it 500 years. But to add to the injunction makes no sense to me. It doesn't make sense. Why would I add things that shouldn't be prohibited in the first place? So it's not specifically mentioned in Poskim, then it would seem to be permissible. So it's at least a suffix, can you? Okay. And then chametz olah pesach. As long as you don't know for sure that the owner and the owner didn't sell his chametz of the store, then you can buy there. Because like if you go to a random supermarket, and you want to know, buy food there, so you don't know whether the food item was kept over Pesach by a Jew. So you don't have to mention. You don't have to go crazy to try to find out, is the owner Jewish? Was the food there in Pesach? As long as you have a reasonable doubt that will take you more than a few minutes to clarify, then you could assume that the supermarket either sold the chametz or it's not owned by a Jew. I think that's it. Okay, questions. I'm open for any questions now. I'll stay as long as people want me to stay. And thank you everyone for coming.
Rabbi, what are the times again for the first Seder and the second Seder?
I'll get that for you. First Seder. First Seder is 7:41 is when you could start preparing without malacha.
Right.
8:02 is when you could start the Seder.
Oh, 8:02. Okay.
So you can start preparing the cooking and things like that. And then Sunday night, I'll check my zmanim. New York, I'm from Philadelphia. So the date would be Sunday night, Saturday night. So Saturday night, sorry, Sunday night, the Seder can start as early as 6:03, if necessary. Ideally, it should start after 7:21.
After 7:21?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Anyone else? Everyone should know they could call me anytime, or text me, or any way you can reach me. I'm available to answer questions at any time. So things come up, feel free to reach out to me. I'll stay if someone wants to ask something. Yeah.
I was saying thank you, Rabbi. Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
Thank you very much, Rabbi.
Pleasure.
Thank you.
Sure.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Rabbi, what did you say if you're going away?
You're not going to be home the whole Pesach.
Yes.
You don't necessarily have to clean for Pesach because you're not going to be there. You should sell your house, but you don't have to clean for Pesach. If you're going to be there Thursday night, then you should do a short, small bedikah. Like just making sure all the chametz is in the correct places in your house.
Okay.
You want to put it away. It's best to do that if you can. But okay. other than that, you don't have to clean because you're not going to be there. As long as you sell it.
Rabbi, my wife wanted to know because she doesn't eat meat or chicken, and I know you don't. What are your meals like during Pesach? So what do you eat like for your various meals?
I'm not so good at remembering these things, but Miriam loves salads. Like we said, make quinoa a lot. My mother-in-law likes to make matzo lasagna. Yeah. Other things also. We have the alternative meats are usually the Beyond Burgers, Beyond Sausages. I think they are kosher Pesach. So I think those are good options, but you have to make sure that the ingredients are still kosher Pesach. What else?
What do you eat at the Seder?
So we usually make a soup, and then salad, and what's the main? The main is I think quinoa. Quinoa is a big thing. Quinoa is a really good fallback for everything. For anything you would make starchy. What else? I'm not good at this. You know, if you want to text me, I'll ask Miriam. I'll give you some ideas. She makes the menu in our house. I just take orders from her.
And you eat it.
And I cook it also.
Oh, okay.
I just find out what she wants me to cook. And then I eat it. So the soup during the year, soups and salads are great. So I usually have that as meals anyway. So it's very easy to do that in Pesach.
All right. Thank you, Rabbi.
Pleasure. Thank you.